Ron Bijak is the younger.
Not Jack, because he's my younger, because they're around.
Right. I think he's the younger. He's now he's in charge of the working, the construction, all that kind of stuff. Ron Bijak is the other brother.
The actual principal is
Pretty Barber.
I tell you, it was the ashram teacher, ashram head.
For Priti?
Yeah.
He's the principal.
Is it?
Yeah, after Prahlad left, right?
Yeah.
He's the principal.
Yeah.
Somebody was, because we had invited him for the seminar, of course, and then a few days after the seminar, somebody mentioned, oh, actually, he's not the principal, somebody else is the principal.
Right.
That was a little confused.
No, the Narishwar's son, what's his name? Madhavaranga. He's not the principal. He's a co-manager. Well, maybe he is the principal, maybe suddenly they changed it, no one told me. But they're equally, you know, they're both involved in Priti is the one that basically kind of seems to be the most dedicated one there all the time. Madhava's, like, he takes all the boys on the parakramas and stuff like that.
Priti, yeah.
But he's not so communicative. So Madhav is a much more communicative person to the parents and stuff. So he's kind of the spokesman.
We added two more points on the list.
Okay.
We continued our brainstorming at lunch.
Oh, you did, I'm good.
And then we were fortunate enough to be able to remember what we had brainstormed. What time?
What the meeting is getting over.
Getting over? We don't know. We're just going to, we have a little bit of work to do, and when we finish, we're going to.
Between now and 7. Between now and 7 at the latest, probably before.
Before 7.
Hopefully, much before 7.
Or 6:30.
Huh? 6:30. I don't know. Tell him we're just going to do our work, and when we're finished, we're going to adjourn.
Okay, I'm saying between 6:30 and 7.
No,
it could be earlier.
by six.
No guarantee.
Could be finished by 5:30.
We don't actually know what every one of us is thinking about what's the next thing to be done.
5:30 to 6.
5:30 to 6.
I think. Which 2 points were added?
Implementation is urgent, but naturally will proceed in pace as devotees as the pace of devotees' interest. In other words, we have this unimportant point to mention.
He can be
coming.
Okay. Thank
you. So I just thought that was important to mention that it's, you know, the.
There's
an urgency, but we're not going to. The RGB should say that it's not going to sort of impose.
There is an urgency, but we have learned in Krishna consciousness that patience is a virtue.
But there's many other priorities also. We can't say that this is the only priority.
Yeah.
The only urgent matter. We can't say that.
Another thing was just that we should convey somehow or another in the whole presentation, or maybe at the beginning of the presentation, that adopting Varnashram, adopting this process, adopting this position paper, is in everyone's interest. It's not that it's going to be a boom.
It's for your own good.
Yeah. But we have to convey it in such a way without saying, this is for your own good.
And I heard a little bit, but it's for you.
just compare it to hypodermic needle. You know? Hurts a little bit.
That covers that position paper, then, right? That's the ingredients are there.
So what else?
Unless we come up with whatever is some major point. But yeah, that's, I think, the basic points. Can we refresh my mind or our minds regarding what we want to present again to the RTB?
Can we sure we wait till Dev Amateur comes to do the review?
Okay, good point. Yeah. And then at the same time, we won't know what to speak about right now.
Well, there was an outstanding. The last thing we spoke about was the three models. How we were going to present that or something.
The three models. Three. Was that?
Oh, we were discussing privately that when we that we should prepare a document, a separate document about the three models, and explain them as thoroughly as possible, and then to talk about the comparative advantages and disadvantages, not just advantages, but just compare the different aspects and how ISKCON will relate them, relate with them, and we'll see them and like that. And so that would, and then that should be presented before the position paper. We were thinking to do the three models. Even logically, maybe it would seem better to do it after, but after the first theory and then application. But in this case, since they're expecting something, and they're concerned that it may be what they're going to get from what they're expecting is going to be threatening to them, so better to take put that out of their mind first. By dealing with the details first about the implementation is the non-threatening aspect of the
keep the threatening at bay. You want to deal with the non-threatening first.
No, whatever fears are there in their mind, put them to rest by dealing with the three models and how that they will be. They will have their eyes wide open and be able to deal with any eventuality. No one's going to be pulling any fast ones on them. And that they can deal with each individual case as it comes up according to the whichever model is it's following. And then at the end have the last thing would be the position paper, have them go through the draft and have a discussion.
So what is what are the other things we want to present to them, to the RTB? These are the two main things, based on the document on
there was the first, was there something before?
Preamble? That's very
good. Preamble, we banded the letter on.
Well, I think it's
an introduction.
Yeah, some kind of introduction.
Well, we're going to tell them what's been worked out with the EBRI project.
Right.
Okay, which I spoke to Shankar Kari Prabhu at lunch.
Yes.
And he said that he would. At first he wasn't sure he was going to be in my group, but I really got on his case that he had to come. So
he
without you. Without your people being there, I don't know if it's gonna. I remember it now. I remember now what he said. So these kinds of things, it's just like any. It's just very similar to the kinds of things they deal with all the time, is that you have this preaching project in this place, doing this kind of activity, and there's another preaching in another center in another place. That's doing another kind of activity that's overlapped somehow or other with the first one. And so there's a tension between them and that you have to negotiate and work it out. So, and he sees these things take time, these always take time to sort out. Nothing's going to happen overnight as far as getting those kinds of issues sorted out. But he'd be happy to sit with everyone that's there from every project in Mayapur and with Sudhir Chaitanya and talk about it. And then also the SIDC is going to be meeting and they can also talk about it. That whole issue should not affect any of the long-term things. It's just basically a short-term issue.
And whether it needs to be brought up at the plenarium?
Whatever is decided will be, because it was already discussed at the September RGB meeting. So a report should be made as to how, what's come up in the discussions, whatever it is.
Well, just allowing time to take its own course. That was one of the issues. The other one was Lorisco.
And we're going to mention that Lovesco is an issue, but it can't really be sorted out until the basic principles are established, and therefore, here's the three models, and then if the RGB is happy with this presentation about the three models, then Lovesco will meet amongst itself and decide how it wants to
fit in.
He's got it down for me. That's how I was seeing the presentation.
So just to get it right, some introduction, giving some feedback regarding, because that was. In other words, the issues that were brought up to the RGB in the previous meeting need to be briefly reported on. So one will be according to whatever we work out with Shankaradi regarding the meeting. And secondly, we just mentioned that depending on how the response is there from the RGB members regarding our feedback in this committee, then the Lovesco issue can be well
processed.
So after mentioning these things as part of the introduction, then we were mentioning better we present those three models. And then after that, the position. Of course, one may argue that it may be helpful, I'm just presenting this as an argument, it may be helpful to first be exposed to the philosophy behind Varnashrama as let's say, pointed out in our position paper, which would possibly give more understanding as to why these three options are considered viable.
Yes, that would be another way to go, and I don't know what, offhand.
In the preamble, we could say we've had our meetings, and there are these issues which are outstanding from the previous time, and we thought that in order to kind of be able to present various solutions, first of all, we would like to introduce you to this position paper, which explains everything. And then it will become clear why we have chosen. So in other words, there is a solution. We'd just like to explain this to you first. And then we'll give you the solution that you look at. Present it like that. Does that sound like a viable option?
Logically it makes sense. The only thing whether people are going to be in anxiety and not be able to focus properly on the position paper because they don't know what the punchline is going to be.
Right.
That was the only thing.
Well, the other thing then would be if you just present the three options in the beginning. You explain in the preamble that we've got these three options and we've got a position paper. So we're going to give you these three options now.
Which one are you on first?
Or we can say we're going to give you the three options first. But before you make a decision on that, we'd like you to listen to the position paper where you explain the reasons why you chose these three options. So, how do we do it?
That would Does it explain why we chose the three doctrines?
Well, it gives background philosophy, which
supports the whole
ideology
of our ashram, and how if we actually accept it or adopt it, then these are possible ways of adopting it.
There could be an executive summary of the whole thing.
I was thinking that we're going to be covering the philosophy in the ICC.
What's that?
And the position paper is not, the purpose of presenting the position paper is not to, you know, bring the members of the RGB up to speed about Varnashram principles. That's not the purpose of presenting the position paper, because they should already be up to speed on Varnashram principles if they're on the RGB. But it's only just to presenting, this is what you want to say about Varnashram. You have this, the RGB, this is what we suggest that you say about Varnashram principles and how they're going to be implemented and taken care of.
We would like you to endorse this recommendation.
No, we want you to consider this being your statement.
Yeah, we're doing this a little bit of homework for them, just, you know, you already know about all this. But we conveniently put it all into this form so that you can just, you know, oh yeah, okay, that's all fine, you know.
And then, you know, we made some mistake in properly representing your vision for Varnashram.
Kindly correct.
Kindly correct.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. Very nice.
With a straw in our teeth.
That's why I was, I mean, it would be better to do it last.
Right. So maybe we should make a note that we've done so many kind of iterations of the different.
Well, in introduction, the committee, that this committee meeting was held, and as a result of what we were to present is about three models and what is the big project, what is Locus Co in brief, and then also mentioned that we are going to go in detail in position paper about what is, how we can implement or not.
Well, the last thing
we start.
The last thing we've said is that you already know this.
Yeah.
When we introduce the position paper, we say you already know this.
Yeah.
But we've just put it. We've taken the liberty to put it all together because we feel like, you know, this is something that needs to be just officially recognized.
Yeah, we need to have something. We need to have something that we all agree upon, a statement that we can start to work on. Together.
We mean it's like RGB.
Yeah, the RGB.
Who can be or should be our spokesperson or whatever word or name you prefer?
For the RGB?
For us. To them.
For this committee?
Yeah. I think some of them might be a good person.
I have a tendency in the very beginning of a presentation, I get a little bit nervous when I'm in front of lots of people I don't know.
We'll help you.
So I speak.
You'll already have had the ICC presentation on
it's
your
true,
show.
That's true, that's true. If I don't mind doing it, it's good for me too. I participated in the drama during the festival. You know, I was, who was I?
He's on the GBC strategic planning, team building.
Who did I?
Okay. So we have, every time the GBC meets now,
right,
they have a one day that's dedicated to team building exercises, not business. No business is conducted.
One day before the meetings.
No, during the middle
just
of the
some
meeting.
In the middle.
And remember now, it was actually after the meeting was over.
Okay.
But in the GBC meetings, they have, you know, they meet for 5 or 6 days, and then have a 1 day break where they just do, they go to Jagannath Mandir and just have team building, and then they come back and finish up, you know.
That's called team building.
Team building day. So he's one of the coordinators of the team building for the GBC. Go ahead.
Well, we don't have any team building with the RGB.
On this committee?
Well, that's another thing.
This committee. I'm planning to go to the Goshala.
Goshala.
I'd like to invite you to the theoretical followed by the practical.
No, I'm just a theoretical man.
when we did the team building presentation this time, we came in and we had some feedback from the previous year's team building. We'd done a questionnaire, we'd asked all the GBCs what did they think. So Pragosha was reading out the feedback. So at one point he's reading it out and he's saying that, you know, one of the proofs that we work well as a team is that the GBC got together and they did really well dealing with deviance. So at that point, Rajbihari, Prabhupada, steps up and says, Pragosh, I really object to you using this word deviant in the paper. So Pragosh goes, would you put a sock in it, Raj? I mean, you know, this is just typical of you. It's typical of what you do. And, you know, I can't remember exactly what else he said, but he said a few kind of choice things, you know. And then Raj went, Mr. Chairman, I object, I object. And then Pragosh said, yeah, Mr. Chairman, see if you can do something about this. You know, so then I said, no, then back to
this is happening in the GBC, this is in the GBC meeting room, right?
The full GBC, everybody's sitting there.
The full GBC going on, having a perfectly serious meeting. Yeah.
So then I think it was back to Chaitanya Maharaj comes in and says, you know, Pragosh, we said we weren't going to use this word, and you know, now you've just gone ahead and put it in. You know, and this is just like, you know, you should remember, you're not such a senior devotee. And I step up and say, Maharaj, that's so unfair. Pragosh worked so hard, and it's getting really heated. And at one point, the GBC is going to go, Shiv Ram Maharaj said he recommended Pragosh as a GBC, and he was like, oh my god, I'm a bitch. And some of the GBC men were like, were thinking, oh, this is like back in the old days, the GBC, you know. So then finally, who was it? Nishimura Kovacha steps up and he says, excuse me, Pragosh, is this the 5-minute argument or the 10-minute argument? And Pragosh says, this is not an argument. This is just a series of contradictions amongst a group of friends. You know? And the whole thing was actually staged to show how, you know, not to do team building. You know, like, you know. But certainly in the GBC, we were completely convinced that it was a fight taking place.
Oh, I see. It was staged, right?
Yeah, it was, the whole thing was completely staged. We rehearsed it with Braj before we talked about, you know, Braj was down on there.
So you have some experience, didn't you?
Yeah. And then I played, what's his name? Kripacharya in the play Kunti and Karna. So I've been kind of putting myself up on, you know, in the limelight, if you like, just so I can get used to,
right,
you know. So hopefully, do it.
I think Sangha would be good support.
Yeah, good.
Everyone agree? Any serious?
All in favor.
Well, that pretty well covers our different things.
Yeah.
Our book. Our book.
So you have something more you wanted to talk about?
I don't think so.
Not sure.
Okay.
I got that impression.
That would be good then if you could put on email, right? Just fill us in with the kind of, so that we all know what the order of things is.
Yeah. No, I just wanted that we meet again to just go over what we had discussed and to just, because it was getting at the end of the meeting and
yeah.
I just wanted to see it.
No, that's fine. Like that.
Together. And we more or less concluded that it's not so much necessary to present something to the RGB members before the meeting.
Well, we hadn't talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
That was,
I don't know what we could really present to them for, because of the position, unless we gave them a draft of the position paper.
Well, how about the three options?
Oh, three options.
Three options and then pluses and minuses. They
yeah.
could, be, they
okay.
could have digested that
okay,
ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
That will create some resistance and then we come with some
prepared. It will create a buzz.
Yeah.
Maybe. We're not so active on email, but we'll see.
Well, it, you know, just it'll hit home that, you know, this
yeah.
is coming out.
We can try to get that out ahead of time.
Some kind of small explanation. I mean, introducing the three things and explaining that this will be discussed in a larger context with a preview or of what we will be discussing at the meeting without getting into discussions. If you just like
agenda, we can do them.
Huh?
for both meetings to the RNEB members. The whole agenda we had for the ICC and the RNEB. And of course, the last thing will just be, you know, we'll be presenting a draft of, you know, RGB position paper. We can just say that.
RGB
position paper, yeah, on Monash. So we're brainstorming on RGB position paper.
Okay, yeah. Proposed RGB position paper.
So can you, that's my duty then? Prepare this advance announcement to the RGB?
I think it would be logical.
Okay. If
it can help. I mean.
Yeah. I think we have time constraints and so on. Trying to get it. But if everyone's active on email, then I can come up with a draft. But I won't be able to come up with a draft for another 10 days because I'm going to.
Well, I mean, to a large extent, maybe Samba and Harsha can summarize the agenda for our secretary.
Right. Well, he can prepare the agenda, but as far as actually
sending it out
and preparing that three options with that. Hey, Haribo.
Sorry, I haven't been able to.
You look wonderfully bright-faced, Prabhuji. Very nice to have your association.
Thank you. I can just chat with you. Sorry, I've been a little caught up with
some little things here, so.
Yeah. I hope it was
not in sort of interesting. Well, not so much, but let's see. It'll take some time. Sorry I couldn't make it. Please continue, at least.
We're just wrapping up, actually.
I got the message. That's how I came.
Yeah. It came at the right time.
We thought it would be good for us to go over what we decided also with you here. Mm-hmm. So it would be a good review, and we might miss anything we missed. We can fill in our own gaps. General impressions, Maharaj, you want to start with general impressions?
With general impressions?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, I mean, of our meeting.
Yeah, for Ruji.
Yeah, and then somebody will present to him our...
Yeah, then we'll go through the what we decided.
Okay, yeah. It's putting me on the spot here. You don't only want general impressions from me, right?
Oh yeah, we can give general. Well, yeah.
Yeah. No. as will be, I suppose, brought out in the summary that we will be presenting to you in a few minutes. I think our meetings were fruitful in the last couple of days. We covered, I believe, the issues we were meant to cover. These were directly in relation to what was brought up to the DB, RGB rather, last year. And the exchange was quite fruitful. With a mixture of appropriate humor along the way. It was good, cordial exchange.
Free open exchange of ideas.
Yeah, I think it was quite good. So I'm quite positive about the meeting. I get that impression from everyone, but maybe all the other members can agree to that. There were no major hurdles.
Right.
Yeah, that went pretty well.
Pretty much saw eye to eye. Your thoughts?
My jaw was breaking on the mat. how do we present to RGB members this whole concept. ICC, we thought it would be just like more of educationally, not too much into details. So we had for ICC.
I have no problem. We can still do impressions as we later on.
ICC will have some historical development of what how this whole thing is working out. How was the committee set up, and what is the committee? What did the committee do? Then it will talk about four movements and course of Srila Prabhupada and different dimensions of preaching. In like this preaching and etc. for the presidents, temple presidents. So this will be presented in ICC meeting.
Just as an opportunity, right?
Yeah.
Just basically just to show them that this is an opportunity, this is something that's important, it's an important part of Prabhupada's movement, and it may not be so applicable to their local individual cases right now, but it's going to be happening and they should be aware of it, and they may want to, do something about it in their youth preaching, or adding it to their youth preaching program, or whatever, or take advantage of the existing programs that will be available.
RGB meeting, many of the RGB members will participate in ICC, that's understanding. So RGB meeting will go from what was covered in ICC with little introduction to the committee, what went in committee meetings, and brief about what is every project, where does it stand, and what is Globusco, where does it stand, in brief, and then how can ISKCON look at implementing Varnashram. So three models was discussed.
We came up with three different legal structures. One is the straight ISKCON only structure, like Beldam, I believe, Gokuldam, everything's ISKCON control.
Mm-hmm.
And also Ahmedabad, the same thing. But there may be other projects which are completely owned by separate trusts that are not under ISKCON control at all, just locally managed. There may be a third option, which is like a trust, but is controlled somehow or other by the Bureau, where the Bureau could ultimately take control of it if it wanted to, but it's still a separate trust for local self-governance. So those are the three models.
And after that, there will be a position paper, which will actually, in summary, concise format, explain Varnashram mission. And so there were different things noted down what will be presented in the position paper, and it's something that everybody already knows, but it's in concise format, and that would be RGB position paper implement or not.
So we're going to present them a draft of a position paper on Varnashram development,
mm-hmm.
for them to say that yes, you've correctly understood our mission.
Mm-hmm.
And we, this is a good statement. We want to make this adopt this as our official statement.
That's it.
And then we discussed how later on, I lost it now. What was I saying? Hopes us down on the day. well, the position paper contains. Should we briefly show the statements we were going to put into the position paper?
I don't know. It's up to them.
Right.
We brainstormed on our own sheets of paper.
Uh-huh.
All the different points. Or that's just the third one. The other two have been taken down. But all the different points that would go in the position paper. And then Samba's going to put them into a draft document, circulate on email for comments.
Okay.
I think he's pretty tired. Maybe we should save him from too much details.
Maybe I can just read it if you'd like. If it's,
well, what I can do is I can just send it all to you on email.
Oh, sure, sure.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we have it, I'm going to compile it all up anyway. So before I compile it all up, I'll just send different bits as we've got the raw. And the other thing is that we're not sure whether we will be able to complete the, you know, the mission, the statement, position paper, but we're going to make a draft, and depending on what we all agree upon, whether or not it can be considered to be finished, or whether it's just going to be presented as a draft now, which will be finally, you know, fleshed out sometime after the meeting. It all depends on how much we can do in the lead up to the meeting.
And I think we also were discussing how it would be good to send a little bit of information to the RGB members.
Yeah, we want to communicate basically the results of the meeting to the RGB members in advance so they can be prepared.
Yeah, agenda of the ICC and RGB.
Hmm?
We want to share with them the what will be the agenda
with
the ICC so that they're aware.
Because we know that having these concepts discussed is not going to be a simple, trivial matter, so we take as much care as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your... Nothing you want to add?
So we thought of these three models as being things that could be worked out for ISKCON as a whole to develop a national industry model that you mentioned.
Well, ISKCON, we seemed like we agreed that ISKCON was going to be encouraging the development of our national, and in the long term, you know, most of the Varnashram villages that ISKCON encourages will not be under ISKCON's control. They'll be locally, but initially, and for preaching purposes, we may want to keep more direct
control
in the beginning. But eventually, the people will just learn the concepts from us and go off and start their own thing with their own resources, and we can maybe, just like we stamp a Namhutta Center, ISKCON-approved Namhutta, that they may be an ISKCON-approved Varnashram project, you know, as long as they're, and we may inspect them occasionally and make sure that they're going on okay so they can keep the imprimatur, but we can always withdraw it if necessary with no loss of assets because there was their own assets involved in the beginning, so that kind of a concept will be the rule eventually, although initially it may only happen rarely.
Yeah, I guess eventually we have to expand. So
this guy's never going to be able to.
The institution will have its limitations.
Yeah.
So we have to consider alternatives.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. More so than the humans.
So how much time do we have before the RGB meeting?
3 weeks.
You going to be there?
I think so.
Very good.
Well, one never knows, depending on what Krishna has in mind.
I
wanted to be here for this meeting also. I think, which is why I probably thought of Vrindavan as a meeting.
I spoke to Shankaradari a couple hours ago. And he was also not sure whether he was going to be in my group, but I twisted his arm pretty heavily.
He put rank.
But it'd be good if we can, if he's there and you can talk with. Also, we've invited Harsha to come. Are you going to be able to come also? You won't be able to come. But Harsha will be there, and what you got in Harsha. Sam will be our presenter.
Okay. You're based in Mayapur, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's good. Cool. Yeah.
And, you know, Mark Parrish is one of the trustees of the West Coast, so he can also be part of the discussion with, you know, the SIDC about the amalgamating, you know, what the relationship with Henry and everyone else is going to be there.
One small point, it might be good if you could just briefly reiterate the third option. Regarding the models, one, the first one being during the Pandit ISKCON Society, the second one being separate trust but approved by ISKCON, and the third one, some kind of formulated trust by ISKCON but separate kind of.
Yeah, it, you know, the Bureau would not have any ultimate control.
Right.
It would be, they would set up their trust according to their, we may have model.
The Bureau would propose a
we could have model trust documents that they could use at their choice. We may have, there may be different ways, different styles that would, of those kinds of projects, how they want to structure, whether they want to have some formal, you know, Kshatriya thing built in, or, you know, who knows what they might want to do. So eventually those would have to be developed. But that, you know, we would just simply encourage them, and then we would license, give them a license that could be withdrawn to say that there is kind of proof if they wanted such a thing.
What would be the major difference between option 3 and 2?
Well, 2 would be that, you know, that if something went wrong and they deviated from, you know, what is found considered to be acceptable practice, then the Bureau could change the directors.
For 2?
Yeah.
Did we discuss that?
Yeah, and the idea was that when you make a trust, the objectives of the trust are like cast in stone. The government, you can never change the directives of the trust. So the trust directives are bilateral directives that we decide what they are.
So that way that prevents the but that way, someone could, a donor could give money. Okay, I'm going to give money to this trust. It's, I know, but I, it's always going to be under ISKCON control. But it's, the assets are perpetually pledged to Varnashram development projects. Mm-hmm. Okay, as opposed to giving to, I mean, the ISKCON temple in Ahmedabad could tomorrow they could sell
the land
and or, you know, turn it into housing development or something and. You know, it's not under the control of the local people, whereas if you have a dedicated trust which is designed just like that, then it can never go do anything other than self-sufficient farm communities as far as legally possible. Put that in the document.
That's number 3 option.
That's number 2.
Number 2. And what can happen is then that the trust is there and it has its, you know, unalterable way forward. But the trustees can be changed by ISKCON. If the trustees mess around or do something wrong, they deviate from the trust. Actually, even if ISKCON didn't remove them, the government could remove them, right? Because anyone on that trust would have, any trustee has to follow the trust and aims.
Right.
So ISKCON could replace the trustee, but the trust can never change its, you know, its way forward because that's written there. So that's the only difference is in number 2 is that ISKCON can have to change the trustees. Whereas in number 3, they can't say a thing because it's all completely outside. You know, the trust is made by the local bodies.
And they control it.
And they control who the trustees are, and it's all completely under the local bodies' control.
What is one?
One is ISKCON.
ISKCON.
Monolithic ISKCON control.
ISKCON temple decides to do a Varnashram project, and, you know, that's fine, but there's a risk that the ISKCON manager may say, hey, this isn't working, let's just do something else. But that's more, you know, ISKCON would prefer, may prefer that one because it's all completely under ISKCON full control. So, you know, that's one model that certain members of ISKCON maybe just need a bedrock. And then the next option is the trust, which has got the trustees appointed by ISKCON, but the trust is completely Varnashram based in terms of its orientation.
Well, the trust in option number three will also be.
Yeah, but that's got nothing to do with this company.
It's up to the formers, the founders of that trust, how they want to.
Who will be trustee?
How they want to structure, whether they want to make it permanently a Varnashram project, that's up to them.
I think we're talking of two aspects here. One is legal control, and the other is spiritual control. In option one, legally and spiritually, the control is with ISKCON entirely, no question. In option two, spiritual control remains, but the legal control also is there, but to a diluted degree.
Yeah.
Because there is another trust, and that trust operates things within its framework. But ultimately, the legal authority is with ISKCON.
Yeah.
In the third, there is no legal control ISKCON exercises, there's only spiritual control.
Which can also
words,
be withdrawn.
Which could be withdrawn. But that's only spiritual, nothing legal, right? That's from what you said, that's what I can understand. That is like inspirational, spiritual. Some people, let's say a group of grihasthas get together. They're inspired, okay, let's do some Varnashram project. And they use some particular model, some project as a model. And they start their own project, they take help from ISKCON devotees. You know, let's make a charter of, you know, objects and everything. They set up their own trust, it's their own thing. It's their own money, their own activities, their own land, everything is their own. And their obligation to ISKCON is only of a spiritual nature. In the sense that out of their own voluntary spiritual inspiration, they follow some spiritual authorities who are associated with ISKCON, but they're not legally obliged to the institution.
Right.
That's option three.
Yeah. Three has two parts to it.
Yeah.
It'll give you 3A and 3B. One is where they sign a license agreement to use the name ISKCON,
mm-hmm.
and one is where they don't even do that. They don't even call themselves ISKCON at all. They still follow our spiritual guidance,
mm-hmm.
but they don't have any need for the use of the name ISKCON at all.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't sign a license. We have nothing to withdraw from them. We don't have the right to withdraw their license.
Yeah. The only one thing with the third option is that while it's definitely something that's inevitable, I see in the sense that when everything expands, it's just institution cannot control everything. That's one side, inevitability of it all, and perhaps the desirability of it all. But on the other hand, when it comes to seeing that the name of ISKCON may not be misused, because ultimately people are going to see, oh, these are all Hare Krishna devotees, these are all ISKCON devotees. But then it kind of doesn't fit in that, okay, they're ISKCON devotees, but it's not ISKCON. I mean, how's that? You know? So they all see, they give money because they think it's ISKCON. You know, they come there, there's ISKCON temples and ISKCON this and that, but there's no legal control. So tomorrow, should anything go wrong or any scandal or anything happen, then ultimately ISKCON gets the blame, but ISKCON can't do anything about it. Something like that. That's one thing we may have to consider, how to iron out that.
I mean, for option three?
Yeah, for option
three.
Well,
we have to present, the idea was to present to the RGD that option three has risk. There's a risk involved in option three, because we don't have that legal control.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do anything about it. But, and as a result, if a community chooses option three model, then they have to accept the fact that ISKCON may not give its wholehearted support to them because of that factor.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as everyone understands that from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
then it's a risk that ISKCON has to take. Because ultimately it can't control, society.
Yeah, this can happen anyway. I mean, any group of devotees can come together and do that.
Yeah.
Independently, it could just happen. And those fears that you have, everyone will say, oh, they're shaved, they're, like this, they're...
We can't stop it.
Yeah.
And it's gonna. And even if we could stop it, we wouldn't want to. Because we can't control everything.
Yeah. And maybe unwittingly...
Yeah.
No, please, please. Unwittingly ISKCON or reluctantly ISKCON may have to get involved when something happens. You know, like for example, the controversy going on now, this whole matter, you know, this Cambodia matter and everything, now ISKCON's getting involved. Have to get involved because it's becoming, we're forced to get involved. We want to keep out of it. But now because, you know, he's an ISKCON devotee and this and that, everything, the newspapers publish it as an ISKCON man. You know, so
not, fortunately, not the Indian papers.
Yeah.
Only the Cambodian papers and the international.
There was something in Times of India. Somebody sent it.
Yeah, there was an article.
But it did, but the headline was not. Headline was just NGO head, and ISKCON was mentioned in the fourth paragraph.
Yeah, it was there. Mention was
mentioned.
There.
But yeah, formerly they said formerly was with ISKCON or whatever. It was pretty good, pretty fair, the way they said.
So I'm
it.
Just thinking after this little episode, I'm thinking that. You know, we get both ends of the stick. In a sense, you know, how should we deal with such things?
But what can you do about it? It's like we couldn't have done anything about what happened down there in Cambodia.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, we give no objection certificates to gurus, but it doesn't mean to say that we can guarantee that they're all going to, you know, be all perfect. You know, so it's like there's absolutely nothing we can do. If someone decides to adopt this dress and, you know, and then does something wrong later on.
Just like, you know, the Catholic, the Pope can't do anything if some Catholic breaks the law. You know.
Right. All we can do is we can say it's so unfair that someone does something and then you instead of blaming the individual, you blame the movement, which is what everybody, the Catholics do it, the Muslims do it, and as soon as you say Muslim did this, you know, and they say this is so unfair, you know, he's just a person who may be a Muslim, but it's not Muslims that did this, it was just him that did it. That's what we can do in our own defense, is just to say, you know, it's just to blame the media. You're just dragging a perfectly good society into it just because this person happens to be identified with that society.
Which comes down to the next issue, is which we also have on our urgent to-do list, is to have set up a proper communications office in India to, you know, keep good relationships with the press, so we, you know, any of those things are minimized.
That's still on the agenda. And is there not a Department of Communications?
We have someone, we have Rajendra Manaprabhu in Delhi. He's our national communications coordinator, but it's not sufficient.
We
had a meeting with Anantha Manaprabhu in Manipur this year, and he's going to spend some time in India training devotees and trying to recruit more people to, you know, set up a, you know, proper office here. Virginia is the vice president of the Delhi Temple, and this is something he does as part of his service. You know, it's not like a dedicated communications office, but we want to set that up.
One small question in regards to these three options. Sitting where we are today and knowing, you know, what we know about, we're trying to foresee in the future how things may develop. Of the three options, which one do we expect will become the more prominent?
Short, medium, or long term? Short term, option one, medium term, option two, long term, option three. My humble opinion. Short term, we have already have so many projects which are directly ISKCON controlled. But as the consciousness of our national development develops, you know, more people become, and resources can be acquired specifically for that purpose, then option two will be the desired model, because it's, you know, it's, we know that the assets are always going to be under ISKCON control and always dedicated to our national development. But in the long term, that's going to be too unwieldy. When the lots of communities come up, it'll be too much for ISKCON to control all that.
Now, Mahatma would fit into two or three.
Which one do you mean, Mahatma?
You're missing Mahatma.
Three. Or two, if they want.
Right.
Two or three.
Right now, probably more three than two.
Yeah, but actually a good number, the many Namhattas, those which are mature enough to have, you know, to have a sophistication to acquire land, you know, are themselves concerned. You know, generally what they say is that we want to acquire land for our non-hunter purposes, but we don't want to be controlled. We don't want to be in control because we don't want to have fighting in the future about who's controlling it. We want this kind of control it. People are saying that, even though they're raising the resources and it's not, you know, they're not formally ISKCON. They want ISKCON to own the land. So we find this phenomenon is ISKCON is buying the land, and then, but we're not using it. They're the non-hunters using it. Bilba is happening in Bilba.
Yeah, but they're all hardcore ISKCON devotees.
Yeah, hardcore ISKCON devotees.
And ISKCON is in control, in the sense that there's a department in the temple that looks after non-hunter preaching. And there's one devotee who monitors the situation and see, but we have a temple preacher going there. It's like an ISKCON outpost, so it's fully under the control of ISKCON. And that, so in that sense, I guess it would be more like a Model 1.
No,
Namhatta becoming more national.
But yeah, so even
so Namhatta devotees, they say, okay, there's already a village and they're following Krishna consciousness and they adopt Varnashram principles.
Yeah.
And it's their own land. So it falls under three actually.
No, if it's like in this case it's ISKCON land, then it's Model 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if it's the privately owned land and they're just setting up their own thing, then it's either two or three depending on certain things.
Yeah.
ISKCON as a society that will need to ask itself is whether it is desirable and practical. It was what you were referring to a few minutes ago to be handling all these legal matters, especially in connection with land. You know? It's like right now we have mostly temples where we have ISKCON as a society has direct control and has to manage, etc. like that, but we have limited numbers of such temples. When we start looking in the realm of Namhata and beyond Namhata in terms of our ashram, we're looking at hundreds and thousands of entities, and so ISKCON as a society seems to me will not be practical or desirable, not want to. We already have so many matters to
do. Yep.
When it comes to British development anyway, in a sense, it's like it is just the outside world. You know, it's just that they make this in effect, and I mean, ultimately, it's very desirable. The whole villages of people chanting Hare Krishna. We don't have to give them the name ISKCON or whatever. It's just, you know, it just becomes a kind of society-wide phenomenon, isn't it? And ultimately, that's what the way it would be. So it becomes just like the outside world. The outside world just transforms itself, normalizes itself into Krishna consciousness. When you've got like two or three self-sufficient villages all next to each other, then there's really no need for any control or anything. Everything is taken care of internally. I mean, that's what we understand, the whole purpose of it. You know, it all becomes self-governed, and you know, they take care of their own disputes. Someone comes down, it's not that ISKCON has to come from Bombay to sort it out, the village is sorted out.
Yeah.
Someone in the village deviates and does something wrong. The village sorts it out.
One thing is when it comes to donation of land, you know, it happens often. People want to donate some land in the village or something. They wouldn't do it to a group of people. They would rather do it to an established institution. So whatever donations of land we've got now, we've got two donations recently. They only want to give it to ISKCON, not to the group of devotees from ISKCON. In such cases, you know, if you want the land, then we may have to take it in the name of ISKCON because they trust the institution. And they are assured of the security of that land that won't be misused.
Well, option two also provides the same amount of security. And as we more and more preach about how we want to use the land for our national development, we have good models of this option two and functioning, we see that it works nicely, we may find
the
option two
the
is
donor,
a
good,
huh?
The donor has to have the confidence level and the awareness of such a model.
Yeah, we can explain to him that yes, it's kind of, it's a separate trust. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what is the trustees, but still, this man has control. Mm-hmm. You know, show him legally.
Another side of that also would be that once ISKCON adopts this paper, then there will be no problem anyway, because it will just be running as a varnish, but there will be no fear on anyone's part. I mean, the fear now is that we've seen in the past that devotees may have gone towards varnashram development, then the manager changes and he changes his idea, and then it becomes not a varnashram project anymore. But if actually ISKCON, you know, India adopts this the whole varnashram principle, then it automatically everything will be fine anyway. So in which case they can with confidence give it to ISKCON, and ISKCON will confidently develop as a varnashram project, then it will become a wonderful varnashram project. So the reason for having the other options is just the fact that there's the worry that ISKCON may not, some ISKCON leader may not, you know, develop the varnashram side of things.
Mm. Sometimes the donors, they just want to see it. My land, I want to have, want to be the temple of Krishna on my land, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they think. My mother, before she died, she told me she wanted this land, you know, to go for a temple, and something like that, you know. Well, that's where we find the phenomenon more, right?
Well, traditionally, we know how, I mean, going back to the Vedic times, of course, all land was...
King's
probably. Yeah, was under the king. And then more recently, that's in the more recent history, even we see now in certain places that properties, large properties, were under temples, under deities, controlled by deities. So that may also be, in connection with the point you were making, how people feel more secure by giving to an institution or by giving to a temple, then it's going to be used for that purpose and less of a risk. Misused by individuals, for example.
There are other cases where devotees have, or people have donated land, and then ISKCON sold it. In Costa Rica, I think that just happened, no? Or there was something in Costa Rica.
Don't mention that.
That's still a hot
potato. Yeah, that's still.
Don't believe everything you read.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
In Australia, that did happen.
Right, it has happened around the world. People have donated land to ISKCON, and then somehow or another, someone sold it.
Yeah. Well, we see the Gaudiya Mathas, right? The Sri Chaitanya in Mayapur used to have so much land for the deity there.
Wasn't that taken by the government?
Huh?
Well, that wasn't vested. It wasn't taken by the government, or is there more than 21?
Well, maybe. Well, but I think they've also sold.
Oh. There are many cases in India of temples that, the Saivites are secretly selling off land and this and that and becoming enriched.
It's very common.
Yeah.
Also, another reason that favors decentralization is the changing laws of the land. And laws in whichever country they're in. There are always ceilings. There are trust, you know, can't have more than so much land, so much. All this. There's obviously a limit. And even if you have separate trust controlled by ISKCON, still that's considered like a backdoor violation of the law, which is a problem we're facing in my opinion.
Yeah. It's extreme.
So,
it's in my opinion, it's extreme.
You know, we have to figure out ways, and it's all agricultural land we're talking about, is basically.
Just get people to cultivate the land.
Also, in Gujarat there is a rule that only a land can be purchased by agriculturists.
Yes, every state that's there.
Every state. So, if it is in the name of ISKCON, how do we go about it?
Actually, you're not supposed to. A trust is not an agriculturist. An agriculturist is a farmer. Of course,
if you have already an agricultural land, then you are considered an agriculturalist. Whether you may actually be farming or not is another question. That's a trick that many people use. So you buy some agricultural land somewhere in some state, and then go to the other state where you want to buy the land, showing this document saying, I'm already an agriculturalist. I have in Himachal Pradesh, I have 1 acre of land. So this is for an individual. But for a trust, even that is not possible. So you have to take special permission from the government to actually entitle you to all the land, and the government has to give it.
We're going through that right now. It's very difficult. It takes more time.
The first model will have this limitation.
What's that?
The first model will have this limitation, that ISKCON is going to own the land, because ISKCON...
Well, all three models will have the same limitation. All three models will have
the same limitation. But individual people, like, they are farmers, and they get the land, and first individual people...
Well, the fourth, then that would go, we going to have a fourth model where people just own their own land? And,
That doesn't work out.
That's third model B. Lambert.
But ISKCON is an agriculturalist, isn't it? Because we already have an agricultural land.
No.
Actually, yes, indeed, you could talk about a fourth option in which you have a conglomerate of privately owned lands. You have one person owning 1-2 acres here, another owning 3 acres, another 4 acres, 5 acres, and they all stay together and plow their own land.
And then someday, when one of them wants to eat meat, then they, you know, their kid doesn't follow the principles.
There is another thing that is being introduced here in India, and that is like what they do in America. What many people are doing in America now is they're forming a, I'm not exactly what they call it, a housing cooperative, whereby instead of an individual buying one land, 15 or 20 individuals get together, 15, 20 families. They buy the equivalent amount of land they would have each individually bought. And then what they do is they share the whole thing, they make it a legal agreement amongst themselves that they're going to build all the houses over here, and all the land will be amalgamated, we'll have one workshop which we'll share, one agricultural set of machinery which we'll share. And they're doing it in that kind of way, so that basically they all get as much as they would have had individually, but because they're sharing it, they get so much more, and so they don't have to spend for their own individual tools, or, you know. So that's one way which is being done in America and Europe. And I've heard that Dhairam's done something similar to that. And in his apartment that he's built, the land that the apartment is built on, they've sold a little piece of the land to each person who wants to buy an apartment. And then they're making an agreement that all of them together will build an apartment block on there. So actually they only own the bit of land. So there's kind of various ways that you can get around various things. So I don't, in terms of the agricultural side, I'm not exactly sure how that works here in India, but I've heard that this is another possible option. That you form a kind of a housing association whereby the land is owned jointly.
Yeah. Actually, when we ran into trouble with our Gokulam land, first time we applied for permission to the government refused it. Although we had good connections with the bureaucracy and we worked very hard, but we hadn't gone to the ministers because the bureaucrats assured us they would push it through. But somehow they were not able to push it through at the very final cabinet meeting in the government, and we lost it. So then we tried again, but what happened was that the government changed. So then we started exploring other alternatives. And one of the alternatives we explored, ultimately we got the permission when the new government is formed. So now we're secure. But one of the options we explored was a cooperative society, an agricultural cooperative society. A normal cooperative society is one thing. Even the housing societies in the cities are now, you know, so-and-so housing society. But an agricultural cooperative housing society works in similar lines. It's a few people coming together, forming a society. ISKCON is also a society, but it's also a trust. So you form a society, and there is a certain object there, and then you own the land collectively. It's a collective ownership of the land, and everyone is responsible, and everyone has the power and has a say in the matter.
So that's option three.
You could say that, yes. It's something like that, but it's a separate thing.
Yeah.
But that cooperative society is not a trust.
Yeah, well, trust or society or whatever, I mean, that's a detail, what kind of a legal entity it is, but It's a separate entity controlled by
it's
the
a member.
By the members.
Yeah. Here you have trustees.
Yeah, well, the trustees would be the owners. It would each be the trustee. Or if it was a society, then they're the members of the society.
Yeah, a trustee is not a beneficiary, but a member is a beneficiary.
Yeah, I mean, there's some legal technical differences, but the same. But it, for our purposes, it's basically the same thing.
Okay, so we're basically saying that the third model could mean a trust, or it could mean a cooperative society, agricultural cooperative society. But even this, if it's a joint ownership, like you mentioned, it also then be a variation of this. So then what we're talking about is having a lot of variations in Model 3.
And that same variation could be perhaps in Model 2. We could explore whether Model 2 could also be that model, where a member would lose his membership and get his money back if the Bureau finds that he's no longer qualified.
Yeah.
And then that same share would have to, someone else would have to buy that same share.
Yeah.
And become a member.
All we have to do is find a qualified king. All our problems will be solved.
Powerful.
Well, how about a queen, Sonia Gandhi?
I make it. No, it was so easy in that, did it? But it worked. I mean, I think we cannot even dream about getting to that level.
All the monarchies are now becoming so-called democracies. The last bastion of the monarchs was in Bhutan.
Yeah.
And the king has been working hard to transform it into democracy, much against the wishes of his people.
That's fine. Yeah.
But the people wanted to be the king.
Yeah.
And the only reason they're going to vote is that the king wants it.
It's a funny situation. It must be unique.
Everybody,
the people want the king, and the king wants to become democratic. Everywhere else, they're trying to force the king out.
Yeah. So, and his argument was that now you have a good king, but what in the future if you don't have a good king? But still, monarchy holds. Vena was there, but the control was with the Brahmanas. I mean, they regulated the whole thing. Self-regulatory apparatus was there in the Vedic times. So the Brahmanas would step in and sort out the thing, level it out, step back again, and let the Kshatriyas do their thing. And they would guide and counsel or whatever. But I guess then we could talk even about this model, individual land ownerships. In New Vrindavan also I heard that we have private ownerships of land.
I don't know. I'm a property trustee there, I wouldn't know.
No?
No, they don't keep me informed.
That's right. Oh, is it houses they buy? I don't know. So in any case, it's a model. I mean, eventually you could see that happening. Even in Gokuldham, for example, we had a lot of devotees coming with the idea, what if I buy an acre of land nearby? What if someone else says, I'll buy another acre somewhere else close by?
When you bring down and
what do you say to them? You discourage them or encourage them?
We're neutral. We say, because they come with a lot of hopes and aspiration, putting their money in, we don't want them to invest something and tomorrow, we say just wait and see. But if you want to buy the land as an investment, go ahead and do it. No problem.
But in Gita Nayavi and also in Vrindavan, they have sold. I mean, the Balabhadra owns land that belonged before to Vrindavan.
Right, so then that's what I'm saying.
Balabhadra has purchased land and he has his own on what was previously New Vrindavan land. He used to have, 5,000 acres. So they have sold. Gita Nayavi also was a couple years ago.
So this is a possible model that you're talking of individual ownerships. And they all get together at a common place, you have a temple. You have, let's say, 10 people, each only 1 acre, and then 1 acre is jointly owned and you have a temple on there and they all assemble there.
Saranagati is shareholding. Each devotee, actually, they're voting members, and they have each 5 to 10 or whatever acres of land. And now, more recently, there is one land that is ISKCON land that wasn't there up until recently, which is
where the temple is.
Yeah, which was donated actually by one of their shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like different models like that. I think we have to allow that these kind of differences. There's so many factors involved. Right?
Yeah.
I think the whole idea behind making or presenting these different models is to demonstrate that in order for Varnashram, for the Varnashram mission to actually be implemented, we need to allow for these different options,
mm-hmm.
and then people according to their individual situations and whatnot will opt for A, B, C, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We were discussing that we are going to cities to please them, so that devotees at one stage realize and come to villages. But if this land ownership, which is from the government, is very difficult for a person who is non-agriculturist, that means most of the city people.
Yeah.
So if then we are projecting for ISKCON society and for the whole world to really develop it, isn't this going to be a major obstacle in our future vision?
Well, sooner or later, we as devotees, you know, with the different contacts that we have, we know how the various regulations that are there in different countries for land are not very conducive for, you know, I mean, it's all artificially, the prices are all inflated, and so I think that's part of our national also down the line, is that we'll have to exercise certain kind of influence so that certain laws can be changed, because it makes it extremely difficult. People are not encouraged to get small pieces of land. There's all these regulations which make it difficult for one who's, as you mentioned, most people are not agriculturists. You know, most people nowadays are, like in America, 95% of people live in cities or towns.
Mm-hmm.
So if that kind of a law is there, then that means that in other words, the laws are made so that they can have, so that the different governments can promote and have large-scale agriculture for business and you know, monocultures and whatnot. And that's the difficulty we face, for example, in places like Canada and I'm sure other countries. If you buy 100 acres of land, the law is that you can only build one house. Of course, it depends what they call, what is it? Yeah, zoning. It's agriculture land. You cannot build more than one house, because they figure that one family can cultivate at least 100 or more, because machinery machines.
A lot of that's changed now. Like for instance, in England, they're realizing now that the housing market has become so artificial that they've got entire villages on the coast which are empty for 3/4 of the year because they're owned by city people. And meanwhile, the local farmers, they can't live there.
Right.
And so there's no farming can go on because people can't live there. So they're beginning to change their policies because they're realizing this is becoming detrimental to the whole health of the nation. You know, so they're realizing, and even just the other day, I read about an article here in India where they're realizing that actually, there's so much trouble, like this our whole agricultural system that's going on now. Wheat has risen by 80% in the last year, the cost of wheat. Biofuels are taking food land,
yes.
And so food is becoming more expensive. In America, the farmers are all over 50. No new people are taking farming. And there's a big food crisis in the world right now because of all these various factors.
Correct.
And people are beginning to realize that this is so short-sighted. Everyone's just thinking about how to make money from the city, you know, big business environment. And meanwhile, the food supply is just dwindling and disappearing. Because no one's really thinking about that. There's no profit in food, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of at least in the farming side.
And in India now, the big companies are coming. Reliance is coming into this farming.
A situation may come where government will say the visa food crisis. Let us encourage people who are ready to do everything.
Right, and that seems to be the consciousness which is actually occurring right now around the world in different places. So people are changing their policies because they recognise that. It's a big problem.
Meantime, can we have this as a proposal to make some research by our ISKCON legal office? What are the different ways in which individuals who are not farmers can on the land?
It's state-wise. It has to be done state-wise because every state law is different.
Some of these points are the kind of things that like we have this Varanasram research team, and these are the kind of things that we get in contact with people that need to be looked into and whatnot. I mean, we know, of course, I mean, based on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, that because we're not following the system that is there, you know, so all of these artificial situations that we find are none of them are working because they're deviations actually. So Prabhupada has told us that's the basic system, that people should be happy, just all one needs is a few acres of land and a few cows and production. You know, the whole mentality, so many things have to change. That, you know, agriculture was never meant to be a business enterprise, you see, which it's become like this. So it's a whole change in mentality that is needed, which will be reflected in changes in policies by governments, but we're quite a long way from that. But as some of you mentioned, it's just like in Indonesia, just a couple of years ago, the government is coming back on its previous policies and you know, begging farmers to go back to the natural way of farming, and, you know, without pesticides, because they see all the damages that have been done, that are being done. So it's like a
cycle,
huge. That's it. I'm concluded. So we are basically, what Harsha Prabhu read a little while ago is there are just two agendas basically for the ICC and for the RDB, and we're thinking of sending both of these agendas to the RDB members and maybe with a little bit of information on these different options or models that we see. Meet with these two groups. Obviously, this is, I think we can see this as one in a series of meetings, is it not?
Let's see what happens in Mayapur, but if all goes well, then we definitely should meet again.
The cookies were locked away in the cupboard.
Oh, yeah.
No, yeah. That's a personal regret.
That's not here.
No, in the next drawer down, there's Echo.
That's not open.
I was only joking. Those cookies in there have been
good.
Your
smiling face is a sufficient reward. Just to see it. So
I missed out at the tail end of our meeting.
We used to say, was it, there's no meeting without eating.
Is it?
So long as there's no sleeping.
Well, before we all disappear, we should thank Bhakti Rupa Prabhu for bringing us. Mm. my first board festival, you know.
I think it might have been mine also.
Mine too.
Is that that?
Yeah, I've never been to
about this.
Maybe your last also.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I'm much in favor of doing it now. Prophetic words.
Department.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What was?
Sure. Pretty close to home.
And they met here at the temple.
Yeah.
By the body. Okay. So, offered to everything. Fuck up.
Most of us are leaving tomorrow morning. Early also. So we would like to thank this opportunity to also thank the
hospitality.
Thank you. I don't know, it wasn't much of a hospitality, but
yeah, well, you know, but, we're not expecting cooking.
In your office, you got to use your office.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it could you put to some use at least finally. Uh-huh. Some constructive work done.
Where are you living?
I'm calling the temple.
Tomorrow morning?
Yeah.
Okay, can you leave a little later? Because I have 6 o'clock, I have to be somewhere. And shall we meet at about 7:30? Is that late for you?
No, I'm going to go do some email.
So what's a good time?
7:30.
7:30?
Okay. Once you're ready, you can win. You're coming with us, huh? Okay. Yeah, we'll be here.
Where should that, where is the talk going to
be? Mm-hmm.
I'm final from that moment.
Train?
No, I'm probably leaving by taxi tomorrow morning. 6 o'clock.
You have fixed up already?
Mm-hmm. I spoke to the bus afterwards.
Okay, fine. There's a waste paper bin here.
We can have some post meeting discussions on the way.
Are you guys in the international airport or the domestic?
Domestic. It's a domestic flight, so.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. It's against his religious principles. He doesn't give his things to anyone.
Especially those who are wearing saffron.
Favorite paintings. They're not there. No, I can put it up. I didn't need it, so that's fine.
One group.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, real quick.
You already took so many photos.
Not you.
Huh?
Most of the time, sitting. Vasudeva Amrita Prabhu is not.
These unnatural posings.
So we have to gather here. Maybe we can go outside and do it, and everyone can be together. Or? Yeah, there's a big table in between.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, but get over with. I'm allergic to these cameras.
Can we do it here, or should we go outside?
Okay.